Okay, so last week we did the modern Shabbos guest. Today, this week, the modern Shabbos host. So there is a little bit of overlap. I'm not sure there really is that much. A couple people listened to it online, got back to me, said, "Oh, you didn't cover half the topics." But none of them really like suggested more things that we absolutely need to cover. So we're moving on to the modern Shabbos host. Now, I recognize these sheets have a lot of Hebrew words on them. Really, I just kind of put it together as sources for myself to remember what direction I want to go and what topics I want to cover. But here we go. So this is a question that has really sort of bothered me for a long time, and I'm not sure I even have a conclusion on it for tonight, and that is the following issue. When one makes Kiddush, and there's many people at the table, so the truth is this isn't necessarily only if you're making Kiddush and you're hosting guests, but if you're hosting family members, but it certainly comes up when one is hosting many, many people. So what is better? Should a person make Kiddush for themselves, right? That's always a question to me. Do you want to make your own Kiddush? Oh, well, you know, I trust you, or something like that. There's usually a conversation going on there. But what is the ideal? Is the ideal that everybody makes Kiddush for themselves? Or is the ideal that one person make Kiddush for everybody? And the truth is, if we boil it down, there is a halachic motivation on each side. There's a sort of a conflicting halachic motivations that are coming at each other. Number one is, and the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to address this directly. And a chaver of mine, a couple years ago, I submitted this question actually to Rabbi Flug, who runs the kind of this rabbi question and answer service, raised this question. He pointed out, pointed to this discussion that we're about to have, but also pointed out that keep in mind that the price of wine was pretty high back in the day. That the impression that one gets from learning through a halachas farm, particularly around Pesach, is that the price of wine was expensive, wine was expensive. The people had no money, and it was also hard to, part of being expensive, that it's hard to get. So that is an issue. In fact, the idea that people had, you may have heard the story, that the Chafetz Chaim gives what seems to be a description for the size of a kos, for the size of what a cup should be that one makes Kiddush into. So the Chafetz Chaim's Kiddush cup itself was actually passed on. Like his grandchild had it, I forget what the names were, but it was somebody had it, and they measured it, and it was less than the Chafetz Chaim's suggested amount that should appear in Kiddush cups. And how could that be? Well, don't ask those questions. answer is getting enough wine to fill these cups was a complicated thing. In fact,
the wine was diluted.
The Gemara talks about it being diluted. Yeah. That's right from the time of the Gemara.
But they had more water.
Well, there's only a certain amount of how much you could dilute it. The Gemara is talking about, it sounds like they had like this wine syrup that you had to add water, otherwise it was inedible. And therefore the water was a necessity. But at some point, there is a shear that the Shulchan Aruch does talk about how much water can be added to wine. That comes up in part of the Pesach issues, when Pesach shear, when you have concentrated grape juice and things like that. So how much is not enough in terms of the amount of wine versus water. But that was an issue. That's why we see people, it was not uncommon for people to make Kiddush on challah back in the day. And that probably is the source for the minhag that some have of washing before Kiddush. Does anybody here wash before Kiddush?
I've seen it.
Everyone's seen it. Do it.
The Ethiopians do it when they eat outside.
Okay.
With the bracha?
Yeah, you would wash and make.
You don't do it again.
You would wash and make Kiddush, and instead of making a bar pir gefin, you make a bracha mozi lechem min haaretz. So no, it's not the hefsek. You're going from mitzvah to mitzvah and stopping in between washing, making the bracha. The real hefsek of washing is between washing and making the bracha on washing. The idea that you have a hefsek that we try not to talk before you make hamotzi, that's like a chumrah. That's really a stringency. The main thing is that when you start washing, from the moment you start washing, you can't talk until the bracha is made on it. That's a real hefsek. But beyond that, we're not going to be so strict about it. And you have no other choice. If you're going to make Kiddush on bread, so...
Why is it so hard to just make it after Kiddush? Like, why...
No, you're making Kiddush instead of the bracha.
But why would you ever have to wash before Kiddush?
Because if you're going to make Kiddush on bread,
right?
So
instead of
making a bracha, bori priya gefen in the middle of bench, you're making hamotzi lechem min haaretz.
Right.
So then you can't go and wash afterwards. That's a real hefsek.
Oh, I see.
So you're going to make hamotzi.
So what about
so the Kiddush is part of the motzi bracha almost.
Right.
Sort of.
Correct. So it is. I mean, you're including the bracha motzi in it.
Yeah. You're saying if you don't use wine and you use bread,
you have to do it.
Right.
You have to do it before Kiddush, because you can't stop between Kiddush And right. Motzi to wash.
Right. So the idea of washing before making kiddush is mentioned in the Ramah. The Ramah himself is advocating for that. The Ramah didn't advocate making kiddush on bread unless you had to. The answer is, it sounds like most people regularly made kiddush on bread, and once in a while, if you had a nice occasion, you would make a kiddush on wine or something like that.
So the minhag became
to regularly do that, to wash and then to make kiddush, whether you're making it on bread or whether you're making it on wine.
So then you
wouldn't
have to do it again before the bread if you do it before the wine.
No, you would not. Okay. So anyways, that's all of that is outside before we're getting to what I actually want to cover. Yeah.
It's hard to get wine, at least in Europe especially.
Great.
What about Greece?
It absolutely was.
It
was hard to get anything there. They didn't have grapes, probably. So the Shulchan Aruch has the following idea. That in Kiddush Beveso, if one is making Kiddush in their house, Vishamashkeno, and you hear your neighbor making Kiddush, right? Vishulchano Aruch Lefanav, and your table is set, so can you be Yotze with that guy? So Yotze Bo, you can be Yotze with his Kiddush to Shaper Havei Makom Suda. Because that's still considered Makom Suda. You're hearing Kiddush in your place where you're eating. Vichagon Shini Schavin HaShmei Latzeis U'mashmei Lehotzeis. And for example, if there was Kavana on the hearer to be Yotze, Umashmiel Lahotzi, and the listener to be Motzi. So you are Yotze under those scenarios. However, the poskim then jump in and say, yeah, but that's not ideal, right? Ideal is not to be Yotze from some guy next door making Kiddush. You should have Kiddush made at your own table, which implies the idea of mitzvah bo yoser mi v'shlucho, that the mitzvah, and that is one principle on one side of the equation, that mitzvah bo, it's better for you to do the mitzvah rather than to rely on your messenger to do it on your behalf.
Who's supposed to, is it the listener or the...
Both.
Both people have to have kavanah.
Both.
Otherwise it doesn't work.
Right. Right.
So if you just overhear your neighbor say
correct.
Kiddush and he doesn't know you're listening, that would not...
Correct. Correct. No, that is a... Right. But I just want to bring out that's sort of my note of... That's the mitzvah go yosher mi b'shlucho side. That's the side up, was they say that you're yotze with it. Even if you did have kavanah, even if you set up and said, yeah, at 8 o'clock you're going to make kiddush, I'm going to be at my table and I'm going to hear you and I'm not going to... Right? So, yeah, you could do that, but that is not ideal. Right? Why is it not ideal? Because the ideal is for you to make your own kiddush as opposed to rely on it from somebody else.
But in any event, hypothetically, you're at your table and you overhear through the row house wall that your neighbor...
That probably would not be good enough because he has no idea that you're listening to him unless, you know, this happens every week.
Right.
and
you may not know exactly when it's coming. You couldn't have intended it.
Unless you did, you know, something like that. All right, so the other side of the equation is the following thing. It's actually outside the realm of Kiddush, but it sends you to the laws of Avdallah, where it says, Hayyoshim beis ha-medrash, v'yivyu lahem or. That if everyone's sitting in the beis medrash, and all of a sudden some guy shows up with a fire. Now, how's everybody sitting in the beis medrash and learning? I don't know. But Motzei Shabbos, somebody shows up with a fire in the middle of the beis medrash. So, echad mevarech l'kulam. The Shulchan Aruch says that one person should make a bracha for everybody, and the Mishnah Berurah says even though it's going to take a little bit more time to do it that way, right? It's going to be mevatel Torah, right? Because in order to do this, one guy's going to come in, and someone's going to clap, and everyone's going to shh, and everyone's going to, and somebody's going to have to come in, and you have to pause a few moments until one guy can make that bracha on behalf of everybody else. More efficient, the Mishnah Berurah suggests, would be to go to each person, pass the five from person to person. You can each make the bracha on their own. So why are you? Yeah, for Avdallah. So you could argue about the facts of the scenario I'm giving, but the principle is the Mishnah Berurah is trying to express is the following. Mishnah Berurah says, so why is it that you take this time and quiet everybody down? So the answer is because there's the idea of Berov Am Hadras Melech, that with when there's many people, so that's where the king would reside. So we're used to that concept in Shul with Megillas Esther, that we want to have one minion for Megillas Esther, everybody comes and things like that, but the concept of Roa Madras Melech extends even to smaller amount of people. I think I was listening to Rabbi Shai Schechter mentioned in the Shir, I hope I get this right, that he had a friend who met Rav Usher Weiss in the airport, and for some reason they couldn't make it to Minyan because he was making a connection flight or something. So Rav Usher Weiss says, so I'm going to daven here, and you should daven right next to me. Because of Roa Madras Melech. Right, that even two people together is enough to create this scenario. So you have this conflict here. On one hand, you want one person being... it's better for you to be Yotzi yourself, mitzvah bo yoser mi b'shlucho. On the other hand, you have the idea of Rov Am Hadras Melech. It's nice to have one person and everybody doing the mitzvah together. So which concept then wins out over the course of that conflict? So it's a little hard to say which wins out. There's not really a conclusion in Shulchan Aruch. All I have is the Aruch HaShulchan recording implying the minhag that one person would make Kiddush on behalf of everybody else. Now, where does he say it? I didn't find it in Hilchos Kiddush. I found it in Hilchos Birchas Hamazon. What's going on there in Birchas Hamazon? So if one, in the laws of benching, so if you actually look in Shulchan Aruch, and this I've seen this done once in my life at one person's house, the Shulchan Aruch, the recommendation is that if you have a mezumen, you have one person lead benching and everybody else listens in. One person leads and everybody, that's the idea of a mezumen. That one person is benching and everybody...
The other people listen to what?
To him making benching.
The whole benching.
The whole thing.
Benching or just the first?
The whole thing.
Just the first one.
The whole thing. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. I saw this once in a chaver in Eretz Yisrael by Uri Pilachowski at his house. He did this. He told everybody, you be quiet. He's going to bench. He's going to lead bench. There's a lot of pressure on that guy. Right? But he's going to bench and you're all going to be yotzei with him. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was the reason that Minhag, or some people had said the first paragraph.
Right. Wow. Right. So it's unclear why that would be. What's special about the first paragraph? I'm not sure. The first paragraph, sorry, has to do with the mezumen. I mean, in order to be, that's like if there's one guy who's not benching with that group, so I believe the first bracha is part of the mezumen, so he should listen to the first bracha. I think that's what's going on there. But at Rav Schachter's house, he would insist on whoever is leading the mezumen to bench out loud while everybody else benches quietly.
For the whole thing.
Yeah. Why is, or at least until Ali Chasrin, for the brachos part of
the brachos. And the other people bench quietly, or they listen?
So at Rav Schachter's house, he insisted that he said everybody should bench, but one guy is going to bench out loud for everybody else. Right, so you have both of them going on. What's the issue? What's going on there? So, in theory, he's right. The Shulchan Aruch is, he doesn't need my agreement, but the Shulchan Aruch is correct. That one person, the ideal is that one person be yosei everybody else. Why is that not such a good idea? Because after about four lines, one guy's going to start checking his cell phone, and the other person is going to start looking out at the space, right? If you're going to say, everybody should listen to him, so it's not going to work out very well. We don't have the power of concentration to be able to be yotzi the mitzvah in that particular way. Even on Shabbos, even without cell phones, right? People will find something else to do instead of listening to this person lead benching. So that is not an ideal situation. However, the Mishnah Berurah says, Kiddush benching is a relatively long thing. When it's something that is a relatively short thing, we do have that minhag. So while the minhag is not to have one person bench on behalf of everybody else, the minhag is to have a person make kiddush on behalf of everybody else. So you wouldn't find, so that line of the Aruch HaShulchan is not found in the laws of kiddush area, but rather in the laws of benching area. At the very end of that section, he says, where was that? We don't do this by benching. And because it's a little far fetched to say that everybody's going to listen with the appropriate kavana to that bracha. Just by kiddush and avdala, one person will be able to say everybody because everybody's going to be able to focus for that length of time. But benching is going to be too long. But what's he implying? He's implying that the concept of rovam hadras melech is going to win out, similarly to that benching. And even though by benching there's an idea of a mezumen that doesn't exist by kiddush, still that concept wins out over the idea of mitzvah bo yosim b'shluch. Okay, that is issue number one. Yeah.
With the idea of the rove, the phrase wanting to do it in the group, couldn't that work if one person? I mean, that doesn't work if one person leads it out loud and everyone else says it quietly to themselves, because then you're all saying it. You're all in the same place, and You're saying your own, but one person is leading, sort of like the
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'm not sure you gain anything by that. I'm not sure what there is to gain. Which one are you doing?
Both.
I'm not sure you can get both. Meaning the idea of Rav Hadras Melech is, well, I don't know, plus by the davening thing, you're right. You have multiple people doing it together. I hear. That's not the Aruch HaShulchan's recommendation. So I'm not sure why. Yeah.
This is a little off topic, but it's very relevant. So let's say you're in shul and you heard kiddush. Kiddush.
Okay.
Now you go home. The people that you're with all heard kiddush in shul. Should you hear kiddush again, or should you?
Yes, there is this like whole shir out there about that issue. One person comes home, they're already yotze, they already fulfilled their levam deraisa, to be yotze for other people, and there's eitzes around it. Now, most of those eitzes are fulfilled without us thinking about it, so that's why I didn't include it in tonight's shir. you're raising that issue, right? The issue of the man goes to shul.
Let's say everyone in the family. It's you and your wife are in shul, now you're home.
Right.
You both are kiddush.
Right.
Should you make kiddush?
Yes.
Was that in the day?
Yes,
or
so you need kiddush b'makom suda. You need kiddush in the place where you eat.
Well, hold on. So you ate cake or something in shul, so you...
You think Shabbos day?
Yeah.
I mean, right. So there's two. There's that could work in two directions, right? What the idea of kiddush makom suda can mean two things. One is you're not yotzi kiddush unless you have a suda. The other way of saying it is you're not yotzi your suda unless you have kiddush, right? So you need to eat in shul in order to be yotzi kiddush in shul, and you need to make kiddush again at home in order to be yotzi that. Not everybody agrees. I remember. Last year we had, was it Rabbi Broyd came last year? I think it was last year. So he came to our house for lunch afterwards, and I say, okay, we're going to make Kiddush now, and he like says, well, I don't know why you're making Kiddush, I just heard it at shul. So, okay.
If a Kiddush is very copious, it's a big simcha, is there any reason to have a meal at home?
Well, the Lacha Mishnah. Which we'll get to a little bit. Having the challah.
But if they had challah at shul, that would...
So that's your suda. You qualify for your suda, yeah. Assuming you could, you know, you use your elbows to get to, you know, you get to, you know, to get the kale kugel and shul's a little something. You got to box out. All right. So the issue of pouring. Now, this is like one of these, you know... Everybody gets very nervous about the pouring issue. So what's going on there with the pouring? So first of all, is there an idea that everybody needs to drink the Kiddush wine? So now one person is making Kiddush on behalf of everybody else, as we said in section one. So what's the deal with, does everybody need to then have wine from it? So Shulchan Aruch does have a line where he says, that's the underlying part here, she'itamu kulam. Right? The ideal is that everybody tastes of the wine. Why is that? Couple of possibilities, but that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. That the ideal is that everybody be able to drink wine. So this section here is not actually talking about everybody drinking, it's actually talking about how to get to the amount drunk. So there is a minimum shear, you have to have a mudli lugmav, so can people's different people around the table, can their drinking amount combine to reach that amount? That's what that section of Shulchan Aruch is talking about. Ideally, a person should drink enough on their own and could give out to everybody else. But what does it mean? But once one person is drinking enough, what is it giving out to everybody else? So how do you fulfill that mitzvah min hamavchar that everybody drink? So says the Mishnah Berurah, Hayatim ba'alma, they just need to taste something. Vein tzarech mali lugmav rak le'echad. You only need this mali lugmav, you only need this cheekful amount to one person at the table, right? So, you know, if you want everybody else to drink, giving them out the little kapalachs is sufficient. Giving out shot glasses, a little bit of wine, that will be enough of a te'ima bi'alma. So how does one now get that wine out to them? So one way is and the way that seems to be described, one with following that section of Shulchan Aruch, it seems like you should take a sip and pass the cup around, and everybody else will have a sip as well. It doesn't necessarily work so well for people. Before the germ theory was developed, I remember a friend of my I had a chavrusa in yeshiva who was a real germy, and he said he went to some rebbe's house once. He was from out of town, so he went to all these great places for Shabbos. He like gets the cup given to him that four people had already drunk from. He was like, it was not a simple thing for him. But that is so. What one could do is pour some out. But anyways, is that hefsik? Is it not a hefsik? Etc. But that if you want to avoid this germ thing, you could make the bracha pour out and then he could drink some. That you could do as well. At our house, we are a pre-pouring family. We hold very strongly by pre-pouring, that we pour out the cups beforehand and it's out there, and everybody has it in front of them. Now, that's not found in Shulchan Aruch. It's not found explicitly in Shulchan Aruch, but a couple of sections later, in Sif Tes Zayin, Sif Yid Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch seems to imply that such a thing is going on. Why? It says in Sif Tes Zayin, which is source number 6, Lo yita'anu hamesubim kodem sheyitum hamakadish, that the people sitting there should not taste before the makadish tastes. Im heim zekukim lechoso v'shafach mimenu lechoso shebiyadim rekanis o pegumim. If he is pouring from his cup into theirs. Avalim hayu lahem kosos yait. If they have their own cups, she'ina pagumim, which are not dirty or anything. The pagum is like a spiritual dirtiness, which is beyond the purview of this year. Rishayim lishtos kodem shiishta mekadesh. Then they're allowed to drink even before the person making kiddush drinks. Right? So what's that imply? Implies that at least it's a possibility that everybody can have their own cups in front of them. Sifsi Zion has a similar implication, that everybody had their own cups in front of him. And in fact, when I was thinking one time of like giving a series of anonymous Talmudic people, and my favorite is the guy in Maseches Pesachim. Who's the guy in Maseches Pesachim? So there's a famous story where Rabba shows up in this town, and they want to be mechabed him with making kiddush during the day, and he's like, great, and then he thinks to himself, I wonder what they mean by kiddush during the day. Like, what do they mean? Is it like kiddush during the night?
They call it kiddush rabba.
Right, I understand. Yeah. But it's a story about rabba. I think maybe.
You know, called, it's a great
kiddush. I understand. But I think he was the one involved as well. I'm not sure. It's in something. But anyways, whoever the Amora was, so he's told, you're going to make kiddush rabba. Right, and he's like, what's kiddush rabba? Now, he didn't ask anybody. He didn't take Sidorov. He's like, I'm going to have to figure this out. So he gets up and he says, and remember, Kiddush Friday night is the Kiddush on what? We say it's called Psukim first, but really the Ma'akiv part, the necessary part, is the Bracha Berpia Geffen, and then the Bracha of Kiddush. So he gets up and says, Savri Bracha Hashem Lekim Achlam Berpia Geffen. And then, some might say that he said Geffen, but he said Geffen or Geffen, and then looks around and he sees out of the corner of his eye, some guy is like already drinking. He said, it must be Kiddush is over, because otherwise that guy wouldn't be drinking already. So then he drinks, and the Gemara comments about him, oh, Chacham Ina Varosha, that a wise person has wisdom, has eyes in his head, that he's able to figure things out from what he sees. So what does that imply? So the Rosh points out, we learned several halachos out from this story. One of them is, you see, that everybody can have their own cups. Otherwise, what's this guy leaning for? Right? It must be that he had his own cup. So we do that. One could make an argument that maybe isn't preferable, but when you have kids and guests and things like that, I think it is preferable than getting into this whole 3-minute pouring and passing and all these different things.
So the pouring from the main cup is not critical.
So we don't pour, right? That's my suggestion. I mean, I don't think it's my suggestion.
Get away with it, like when we have a big dinner here.
Yes.
But you're supposed to have it in front of you.
And you don't even have to drink it either, right?
Even drinking in general is a mitzvah min hamufchar, is ideal. But okay, we don't always do the ideal thing.
If you're pouring from the coast of the grain is Mekadesh, isn't there a risk his amount to will fall below?
Yeah. You gotta make sure. I mean, that's why ideally he drinks and then pours the rest out to other people. But you know,
that's the problem.
Yeah. All right. Issue of cutting the challah, similar issue with cutting the challah, and that is the Shulchan Aruch tells us in hamesubim rishayim litum ad sheyitum habotzeah. Now, as opposed to the kiddush wine, which you just said, if everybody has their own wine in front of them, in theory you could drink even before the person making kiddush drink. Here, when it comes to the breaker of the bread, you can't eat before the breaker of the bread eats. About mutter lotis l'chol echad chelkukom she'ochalhu, but he's permitted to give it out, but they have to wait for him to eat. However, so that's a little bit of an issue. But if everybody eats from their own loaves, then they could eat first. What's going on here? So the Shulchan Aruch seems to be describing two scenarios. One is where the person is making a motzi lechem in aretz and then gives out the bread. So if he hasn't eaten yet, nobody else could have a bite until he eats. Because he made the bracha on that bread, he's got to eat that bread first. However, if everybody had their own loaves, so then they could eat before him. The problem is, if you have your own loaves, right, you need to have two of them in order to get this lechem mishnah. So this was done. I remember when I was like a very little kid, when my parents would have guests over, they would do this. They would like set out challah rolls for everybody. It's like old school, right? People would do this. I don't think it's really done so much anymore. But I was like, well, why are they doing that? It's in Shulchan Aruch. This idea at Shulchan Aruch, everybody had their own two loaves. Okay, one doesn't necessarily have to do that. One can give out from the person who cuts. However, you have to make sure that the person making it eats before other people have, and ideally even before they have an opportunity to have. So that's why some people will cut the bread and they will immediately take a bite and then go back to cutting the rest. So that's what they're doing. I mean, that's what you're accomplishing. You're cutting, eating before you give out to everybody else. It seems to me that is not necessary, that that what you could do is you could cut them all up, but just not distribute it. So in our house, we cut them all up and then put it on a challah plate, and then we pass that out to everybody, but then I get to get a bite before anybody else has it, right? So I think that sort of, you know, one could do it. You could cut, eat, and then give out the rest. I don't know. I've always, like, rubbed me the wrong way doing that. So an eitzah, a way to solve that issue in the middle, is to cut it all out but not distribute it. And then when you distribute it, so then you could get a bite in before anybody else. The leader could get, the one who made the bracha could get their bite in before everybody else. Okay, so those three topics are all mitzvos ase. Those are all positive aspect mitzvos. Now we're going to get into some negative issues. Yeah.
Before we do that, can I just go back to the wine and the kiddush? So the custom of pouring it into a cup, drinking from the original cup, pouring it into a cup, and then adding wine so that you have enough to distribute it to people. So is that like
you could do that.
It's not one of those Mythbusters things. It's real.
Well,
it's a real
thing. If it was, we'd be talking about this in the spring, not in the fall.
Why is it any better than pre-pouring them?
Why is it any better than pre?
If you're going to add it afterward, I think what the idea of passing around from your cup is that the wine that was used for the for the kiddush has a higher.
Well, you are. You're taking that cup. It's that wine. You're pouring into another. So it's still that wine, and that wine is being distributed. Now, is it really a higher level of kiddush than that? I'm not sure what it is, but that seems to be the description that many give about how kiddush is supposed to look.
Certainly, the people in Chabad, they have the idea of Rebbe wine, and they always dilute it by adding, you know, less than doubling it, doing it over and over again, so that what people are still drinking Rebbe wine.
Yes,
decades later.
Yes. They are.
Really?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
It's homeopathic.
Yeah, exactly. It's homeopathic.
All right. So those are all mitzvos asei issues. And now we're going to cover a few mitzvos lo tasei issues. There is a issue that is mentioned in the Gemara itself already about lists and menus. That the Gemara has a issue with lists and menus, says that is a problem. It's actually a violation to use lists and menus on Shabbos. It's a violation of shtarim hidyotas. So there is a prohibition in reading secular documents over the course of Shabbos. So these are not secular documents, but the Gemara seems to say that we impose, because people were being lenient about the secular documents, so we impose an extra stringency about these things also. So that's one reason that they impose this issue, this gezeira, says the Gemara. The other reason the Gemara suggests is because there's a concern that if you have this list and different people come, or you got to change their seats, or you don't have certain food prepared, so you might, lest you come and take a pen and start crossing things out or adding things in. So there is a halacha on the books not to use these types of lists on Shabbos. So one thing I saw right off the bat is, does that now prohibit menus for anybody? So if you go to a bar mitzvah and they have like a menu card on the table, is that a violation of this halacha? So that the answer is no, because the guest doesn't have the opportunity to change anything. That's not in their. That's not one of their options. It's only an issue for the host. So we're not going to have a list. We're not going to have any menus. And fine. Now it gets a little more complicated when you have issues like you have a bar mitzvah for 200 people. Yeah, you have table things. Table numbers and those types of things, or for the caterer to keep track of what's going on. How are these issues resolved? So this question actually came up to community kashrus. We had a discussion about this. There are leniencies, perhaps, as we'll get to in a second, and we pretty much said we're not going to have a community kashrus policy on this. We're just going to rely on, you know, every mashgiach will have to ask their own rabbi how they should resolve these issues. Right? It's a little difficult to figure out where should the kulas be, but what are the basic kulas? So one kula that is thrown out there. The starting point is as follows. The starting point is that, well, there might be an issur d'rabbanan, but it's all tzorach mitzvah. When you're talking about it for Shabbos, so it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. Now, which always mitigates things. In fact, we had this in the Monday night shiur when we learned this 2 weeks ago, that that's like an automatic built-in kula. If it's an issue, going to be an issue on Shabbos, so you have the right already to be makil. Now, the problem with jumping right to there is that, yeah, but that's what the gezeira was on, right? You can't say, well, the gezeira was on that you can't have menus for Shabbos meals. Oh, but it's for Shabbos meals, so I have the right to be lenient, right? it doesn't work that way, right? A gezeira is a gezeira, right? So it seems that it should be excluding that. But there are two main avenues that are on the books that one has the right to rely on. Number one is if you're not the one authorized to be able to make any changes. So if you're not the caterer, you're the waiter, you're the maitre d', you're somebody that isn't going to be able to make changes to things, so perhaps you could use that list. So that's helpful. Not sure it solves all the issues, certainly with issues now, but that's one area that one has the right to be lenient on. And the other area is that perhaps there is only a prohibition in reading Shtari Hedyos when you read it out loud, when you read it for a voice that could be heard. But just to scan with one's eyes, so that is that perhaps is permissible. So Mishnah isn't so sure about it, but the Mishnah seems to be willing to put those two things together. If it's A, for a Shabbos mitzvah, Litzorach mitzvah, I mean for your Shabbos meal, and B, you don't actually read it, you just scan it, so Mishnah seems to say, he's not really talking about this case in particular, but he seems to say that that equation works. So if one feels that they need to make some kind of list in order to keep track of those things for Shabbos, so that is the recommendation to not read it out loud. And ideally, another heter that is perhaps even stronger than that is if you never look at it alone. If you only look at it with another person. So Mishra seems to be mekel there also, because you know you have another person there, there's an idea of shmira on Shabbos that other people might help you out in order to make sure that you don't violate dinim. More things happen when it's alone on Shabbos than when you have other people with you. So that is the ideal would be to look at it with someone else at all times. If that's not going to work, just to not say it out loud, but only to scan with one's eyes, provided it is for a specific Shabbos mitzvah, it seems like that should be okay. Yeah.
So does it matter why the list was created? If the list was created, let's say, beforehand, in order to organize...
I hope it was prepared beforehand.
Well, no, that's what I meant. If it was created for the purpose of what to cook.
Right.
And it's just lying there.
Yeah.
Is that the same as a list that's created as a menu
yeah.
or shop?
So I was wondering about that. I thought about that. I didn't see any distinction. And... I mean, it's still a Shtari Hedyot. I mean, that's still what it is, right? It's still a secular document that that might have a Shabbos use, but would have the Gzeri against it. So you need sort of an additional way of resolving that. That's what I think, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
So what does that do with food? Let's say you're in Shul and Gabbai and you have a list of... So
that's the Tzorach Mitzvah. That's on the books specifically as being the Tzorach Mitzvah. I saw that, yes. The Gabbai people have a special dispensation. I think the woman should join the Gabbai lobby to figure out how to lobby for these things. Okay, another question that comes up fairly regularly is the issue of gifts on Shabbos. If somebody wants to come, you have a guest to one's house, and they show up bearing a gift. So there is some issue with gifts on Shabbos, right? What is that issue with gifts on Shabbos? So there is a problem with kinyanim on Shabbos. There's a problem with making acquisitions, lest one comes to write it down. So that's why we don't get involved with money, we don't trade things back and forth, and even Shulchan Aruch mentions, actually Shulchan Aruch itself, I'm not sure it mentions anywhere, but the Mishnah Berurah certainly says that. It says, V'gam aser lite matana, we're in source 14, it's prohibited to give a gift to the chavero, the dummy lemekach u'memchar, that is similar to buying and selling. Sherei yotzei mirshuso, that's leaving one's person rishos and going to someone else. El dematana mutter kishu l'tzarech shab. So this is the key heter is that if it is for the benefit of Shabbos and Yotov, as we see in Shin Chav Gimel Siv Zayin, v'chein l'tzorech mitzvah, v'chein aser litein mashkon l'chaver elim kein hu l'tzorech mitzvah. So you can't give a mashkon, a collateral, unless it's for the purpose of mitzvah, l'tzorech Shabbos, etc. But what are the two exceptions to the rule? If it's l'tzorech Shabbos or l'tzorech mitzvah, and some would claim that those are the same thing. So if somebody comes with a bottle of wine to one's house, so it is certainly permissible to use it, and it is even permissible to accept it, even if you're not going to use it. I mean, sometimes you already have a bottle of wine for someone else, you can still accept it. It is l'tzorech mitzvah, even if you're not necessarily going to use it for the mitzvah that day, it still is okay. You don't have to like pop open four bottles of wine just to be yotzei, just to permit one to accept it. And also l'tzorech mitzvah would be okay. So if it's for the purpose of learning, things like that. So it seems like that should be okay. Somebody on the listserv, on the RCA listserv a couple of weeks ago, raised the issues of giving out prizes to children on Shabbos, so those who come to learning groups and things like that. And he actually reported back that he asked the posik, he didn't identify who it was, but I think it's a pretty well accepted idea that that's Litzorach Mitzvah. I mean, you're giving out prizes so that the children will come and learn on Shabbos, or you're giving out prizes so that they will enjoy learning on things like that. So it seems like that should be okay. He even gave the example of when they throw bags out at a simcha on Shabbos. So how could these kids go around and they'll start hoarding, you know, 7 or 8 bags? So they're not going to eat all of that on Shabbos. Their parents won't let it, right? Well, hopefully they won't eat it all on Shabbos. But are they still allowed to accept? Yeah, that's part of the simcha of Shabbos as well. Now, I would add, perhaps, so when is it usher then? Once you say that, well, everything is for the simcha on Shabbos. So I think, like, bringing a wedding gift to someone on Shabbos or something like that, there you go, or perhaps a gift when there's no way they're going to get to it on Shabbos. Like, you have a bar mitzvah on Shabbos, and 40 people bring stuff on Shabbos. It's not adding. I mean, you can make a case that the rabbi who gives a sefer out to the kid, right, that's okay, because that's from everybody. The kid appreciates on the spot that he's getting this chumash. But when you have 40 people come along and plop a present on a table someplace that the kid doesn't see, so that perhaps is this problem. That perhaps would then be fall under this prohibition of delivering gifts on Shabbos. Okay? And I did not, because this would, I think, take us for a very long time, get into the issue of something on my list that I originally jotted down that is not on this list, is the issue of what does one, food preparations that one has to do right before the meal. All right, that's important to you, especially when one is having guests. So the main things having to do with salad, preparing salad, really has to be done right before the meal. It shouldn't be done before one goes to shul. Also, setting up the night before, things like that. One cannot divide things. One of the rules to permit borer, to permit dividing things up, is that it has to be immediately before the meal. What does it mean, immediately before the meal? Before the meal. You know, there shouldn't be anything dividing when you're doing it and when the meal then comes.
Why is that? Because that way it makes it more closely linked to the mitzvah?
The lumdus of it is probably that... That's part of eating. I mean, you can't. One of the things that this is talking about is you're not allowed to crush things on Shabbos. You're not allowed to cut things on Shabbos. So perhaps there's. It's unclear whether the heter applies there, but perhaps the heter, permissibility is if you do it right before the meal. Why is that? Well, you're going to eat it. You're going to crush it pretty small once it's in your mouth. I mean, that's part of eating. Part of eating is that you cut things up and then you go ahead and eat it. So same thing would be by boer, right? Dividing things up. That you're allowed to divide things up when it's part of your eating process. That's why you're allowed to take the good from the bad. Are you allowed to take the good from the bad once you're about to eat it? And similarly to all dividing things.
That only applied to the three meals of Shabbos? Like, let's say you want to...
No. I don't think it applies to other things. No, it's about eating. There are things about food preparations that are prohibited, but I don't think there's anything about food eating that is prohibited.
No. But you're allowed to prepare before eating, if that is not going to be one of the
It's not a tzorach mitzvah thing. It's about eating. Yeah. Okay. And then you want to clean up after the
meal. You said even setting the table the night before.
No, so I think it's okay, provided that you are not doing any borer for that purpose, right? So if to take all the if you wash all the dishes Friday night, all the silverware, and now you have all the forks and spoons mixed up together, and now you want to set the table off of that, so there's a way of doing that where you take the good from the bad. But the other one of the conditions is that it has to be right before the meal, so that would then be a problem. If you want to do that, you would wash the dishes and never mix the dishes together, right? Only keep the forks, spoons, and knives separately, and then you could set it up the night before.
Or if you took out fresh stuff from the cabinet.
That too.
That's not separated.
Right, that too. As long as you're not separating. As long as they're already divided up.
So like a plate...
You can take a stack of plates out. That's not an issue. The problem is when you have and you're taking a plate off of another plate. Borer is when you have a taruvus, when you have a mixture of things. So if you have forks and spoons that are all mixed together, so then you have a problem.
But if they're all separate in their own little pockets, it's not a problem.
Right. Someone told me that they were a waiter in camp, so there they needed to, when you brought the food in, you were supposed to divide things up before it goes to the dishwasher or something, to the human dishwasher, right? So, so they would. So what they would do is they would like throw the bin out, so to speak. You would like spread it out on the table, and then it's not mixed anymore. Then you're just taking
it's like
things out, right? Right. Well, it's not.
That's all the ribs are together, or the blacks are
right.
together.
Right. You don't want to make it like pickup
right.
sticks,
that's
right?
Right. Right.
Okay, so pickup sticks, that can make our games on Shabbos sheer.
Well, that's a problem then.
It'll be a problem, yeah. Sounds like it should be a problem. Okay. Although you're taking the good from the bad, part of it. Okay, I don't know. Not sure what people say about pickup sticks. All right. Cleaning up. So there's two issues when it comes to cleaning up after a big meal, particularly after a big Shabbos lunch. So one of the issues has to do with muksa, that things that are no longer going to be used, and if they're dirty, and you know shells or things that you know that kind of stuff is technically muksa and not permitted to be handled on Shabbos. And the other issue is the issue of hachana, of preparing for after Shabbos while it is still Shabbos. So you have both of those. Those are, I guess, the two main issues with dealing with the post company cleanup, right?
This would even be your own family,
right?
If there were no company,
right. But when you have company, the the pile is higher.
Yeah, but if you have a family of seven people,
I've met such people, yes.
Yeah, or you have company right. of 14, it shouldn't make a difference.
Okay. But you know, if it's just for your own family, I wouldn't be able to talk about it this year, tonight. So... Alright, so cleaning up. So one issue that Shulchan Aruch discusses, Zimin Shudches is the section that deals with Muksa. You see it's Sif Lam Dalet. It is one of the longest simanim in all of our Chaim. Kol Dover Metunaf, anything that is dirty. Kion Rei, Vekev, Etzava, that's like human waste, things like that. Bein Shel Adda, Bein Shel Tarnagol, we go to things like that. Im Hayu B'chatzer Sheyoshrim Ba, if it is a place where you're sitting, Mutter Lo Tziem La Ashra Le Beis HaKisei, Vafilu B'lo Kli. You're allowed to get rid of it. I mean, there he's talking about taking it to an outhouse or something like that, and even without a vessel. Meaning, you're even allowed to pick it up yourself and get rid of it. If it is something that, so how does one quantify this Graf Shel Rei as its own, this like disgusting thing. If a person is disgusted by it, if a person doesn't want it, it's bothering them that such a thing is in their general living space, so that would be a problem. But he adds it. Oh, I'm sorry, we're in the next section here. Mutter, but if it's not a place where you normally are, so then you would not be allowed to take it out. And if you're afraid that a child's going to get to it, so then you'd be able to cover it up, etc. Right? So that solves a lot of the Shabbos cleanup issues, if it's dirty, such that it's bothering you, so then the muksa issue falls away at that point. But what about the dishwashing? Yeah.
Okay, so let's say you have your dining room. Let's say dining room is where you typically learn. You want the dishes away so you can learn after lunch. So then you want to put the dishes in the kitchen.
Yes.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, does it? You could put them in the sink and you could put the water on.
Okay.
You just have to get them out of the dining room.
Okay, right. So right now, we're very good. At this point, we're getting it out of the dining room. And perhaps even getting it out of being spread out all over the kitchen, right? Now you're able to like sort of condense it into one particular area such that it's not a bother anymore. Right, so that issue is solved by this Graf Shel Rei leniency.
Like scraping the way the disgusting food that people left and putting it into the sink, that would be because it's bothering you.
Right. Like, okay.
Well, but you don't have to look. But if you're in the kitchen, you don't necessarily have to look at it.
Yeah, but it starts smelling. It starts, you know.
Can you say because nefesh becomes an issue?
Whoa.
No, because because particularly until recently, I'm sure people didn't have the dishwashing solution easily. Didn't have a lot of sponges. It was probably harder to clean dishes that were very very dirty. They may not have known about it.
Right.
But if the stuff, the food congeals on the dishes and the silverware, it becomes harder to clean off.
So the harder to clean off issue, I'm not sure about the getting sick extension, but the harder to clean off issue does play a role in a second. That's the next issue, right? So one issue is the muksa issue. The other issue is the preparation for aftershocks, meaning eventually this stuff is going to have to get cleaned, right? So can one start that process on Shabbos, or can one not start that process on Shabbos? So one thing that is clearly permissible is, if you're going to use the stuff again over Shabbos, it is okay. So to clean the dishes up after Friday night dinner, provided that you solve all of the cleaning Hilchos Shabbos issues of soap and sponges and those types of things. So we're not talking about any of those, or hot water, right? Those issues we're not talking about. But just cleaning for Shabbos is okay. Kagon, for example, Shanisha lo adayin sudas lech, you still have meals that you're going to eat. Aval achar sudas shlishis in madichim. But if shal shudas is over, you don't clean it up. Now, I don't think that means, let's say you have shal shudas. I mean, when I was younger, we'd go to an early minyan, so I would daven 8 o'clock, be home by 9:40 or so, wash, eat a little bit, that would be my meal number two, and then I'd have shal shudas when everybody else was having lunch, right? That's a short Shabbos way of solving the shal shudas dilemma. But I don't think it means that, your three required meals and then you're off. I mean, I think it means you're going to use it again for the purpose of eating on Shabbos. That is okay. You're allowed to continue. You're allowed to clean it off. And not only that, the klishtiyah madichin kol yom shekol yom roi lishtiyah, right? This is a proof, actually. And you can certainly clean the cups up because you can always use the cup. Right, cups are okay regardless. You don't necessarily need to be having a meal to want to have a drink. And the Mishnah adds in a few eser kosos. This is a big kula. Let's say you have 10 cups and you're only one person, and everyone else went home already. You're the only one there. Still, reshay la diach kulan, but the hoel v'roy lo kol echad hutz rekulan. Now, once you're permitted, plus all of them in theory are permitted to you. So therefore, you could actually clean all of them, which I didn't see how one extends this to, well, in theory you could permit a lot of things, but I didn't see this really being used as being a major kula to say, oh, then just clean up everything. But that is a big, but certainly if you have guests Friday night, so one would be permitted to clean things in order to use it Shabbos day. Now, what about you have your Shabbos day guests, and now not only is there an issue with the plates, you also have an issue with the chillin pot, and you have an issue with the kugel pan, thank you, right? So what's the story there? Is anything there? Is there any leniencies there? So there is a major, major kula, which on one hand is, well, you'll hear it, is sounds like a big chiddush. On the other hand, it also, at the same time, I think is very mistaber, very understandable why that would be permissible. Says Shlomo Zalman Orbach, is quoted in the Shmir Shavuz Kehilchos saying, here, kol davar she'in ba'asiyah so mishum tircha. He says, first of all, there's no tircha involved. V'gam ragim la'asos mibli lachshuv al to'ela she'asiyah so. And you also will do it without recognizing the purpose of what you're doing. What's he talking about? We'll get to in a second. Mutter la'asosu b'Shabbos. You can do it on Shabbos. Gavim teitzim yasiyasu zu tu'el simo sachol. Even if what you're doing, really the only purpose where you're going to gain from it is during the weekday. Uvachel yom b'fur shehu meichin limo sachol. As long as you don't say explicitly that I'm preparing for the chol. So therefore, for example, you're allowed to put your talus back after davening. That's one example he gives, right? Another example that he gives, you're allowed to...
You have trouble folding.
There's a folding issue, right? But you're allowed to put it back in a normally place. So too, you're allowed to put a sefer back on the shelf, right? You're not going to use it, you're now going to shul, you're not going to be at home anymore the rest of the Shabbos. Still, that's it. You take a book off the shelf when you're done using it. I've heard some people put it back on the shelf, right? That's just part of the regular action. Similarly, I'm not sure if he has this example here. Let's say you take the milk out on Shabbos afternoon of a long Shabbos, and you have cereal and milk late Shabbos afternoon. So why are you putting the milk back in the fridge? So you're putting the milk back in the fridge because you want to have the milk again Sunday morning? Or are you putting the milk back in the fridge because that's what you do when you're done taking milk? You put it back in the refrigerator. And other examples like that. So he even suggests that you're allowed to soak dishes on Shabbos because that is normal. That when you finish a big pot of chillin, and now it's all the stuff in there, you're permitted to soak it because that's the normal way you deal with a pot that has crusty crustifying chillin in it. Now he does that in once it is already encrusted, is no longer permissible because you're no longer just maintaining the status quo. At that point, you're loosening it for after Shabbos. But that's a big leniency for a lot of these things, meaning to put things back where they belong because that's just what people do. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is okay with that. Now, perhaps he's even okay with more of them. I'm not sure he even extends that to soaking chillin pots and things like that. In the 39 Malachos book, in the 4 volume there, in the 4 volume Lamatas Malachos, he quotes from Ravelsky that here, Dachas Svarazu B'Shtei Yadayim. He pushed this off with two hands. You know what we call soaking the chulin pot, because that's what one does after you use it? We call that hachana, right? We call that preparation for after Shabbos. And what are you doing? You're soaking it now so that it's going to be easier to clean off after Shabbos. What's the difference whether you do it now or you do it later? It's the difference is you're going to be saving time later, and therefore you shouldn't be okay. You're going to have to do it longer, Yosef, than if you do it now, right? He says, okay. That's what you do. That's what Shabbos requires. So, anyways, we'll end on that dispute. Yeah, it's a machlokas. Rishon Lezalman and Orbach seem to say that it seems to be very lenient about these things, saying, yeah, you know, that's what people do. Rebelsky was machmer on that issue. I remember I looked into that, I kind of asked around a little bit, right after you get married, all of a sudden you're like confronted with these things you never thought of before. So this, I remember asking around about this issue. It's kind of like, come on, you know, you soak it a little bit. How much time are we talking about for it to kind of loosen up? 20 minutes, it usually loosens up.
Oh, wait. Once you soak it, and it's soaking, then are you allowed then to actually pour out the water? You just have to just leave it soaking. Because once you start soaking it, you've solved the problem that you intended to solve. At that point, why do you have to stop the soaking? Just let it continue to soak to the end of Shabbos.
No, that's for sure. That's what he's talking about.
You say it's only 20 minutes.
No. What I'm saying is, meaning if you're going to assume like be machmer on this, or Belzik says you shouldn't soak it on Shabbos.
Right.
So how much? What are we talking about here already? You know, you soak it a little bit of time, it will loosen up, and it will. It'll be clean. You're not really going to lose very much if you don't start soaking it right away. So, but even
you mean the extra time after
Shabbos? The extra time after Shabbos isn't so much. But the akula would be that if you normally kind of just throw the dishes in the sink, so you're allowed to put it in the sink and just leave it there. And you know, if you use the sink over the course of Shabbos and the thing fills up, right? So that's okay. It's not your kavanah to prepare for after Shabbos. Your kavanah is to wash your hands or whatever else you're doing in the sink. So that would be. Permissible. Alright, so what do we got? Six topics right tonight, right? The wine, the pouring of the wine, cutting of the challah, lists, gifts, and cleaning up after Shabbos.
So, yeah. Clean it up. You bring the dishes in on the dining room table, scrape them off, you rinse them off, you have to put them back in the sink, or can you just, you can't put them in the dishwasher, because that's...
All right, so you could I think you can put it down once. That's the way I kind of think about it. Okay. I mean, you shake the stuff up, you shake it off, now where are you going to put it? So I don't think there's any problem with putting it in the dishwasher.
Oh really?
As long as you don't put it in the sink first and then...
The dishwasher isn't muksa?
Right. Well, it's your holding place. It's what we call a klisha malachto l'isser.
Yeah, so, maybe your sink is not big enough to hold...
Right.
Right,
klisha malachta l'isser is not exactly muksa. It's a different
category. That's what we talked about last week too. About suppose there's a light that goes on if you open up.
Well, okay, right. You got to make sure the lights are set. In our circa 1975 kitchen, we don't have to worry about these lights turning on.
Lights in the dishwasher?
Yeah, you have lights in there. Not on the control panel. You mean
doesn't it get wet
on the control panel?
Oh, right. If there's an automatic light, that's an issue, right? Obviously, right. Yeah. But if you you need a place to put it down, and it happens to be the dishwasher is a convenient place to put it down.
So then, hypothetically, this is off topic, but if that's okay, then.
Can you set it on the dishwasher?
It's Shabbos, and you're changing. You're changing your clothes. If you normally, instead of putting your clothes in the hamper, if you normally put them directly into the washing machine to be stored in there until you use it, is that allowed?
No.
Like, it's the same thing.
You mean you don't normally put it in the hamper?
Yeah, you're right. Your washing machine is on the level of your bed.
Because you're not allowed to wash by hand.
And that's where you
put it. In theory, yeah. So in theory, we, if we have a child that gets all of a sudden comes into the house and is covered with mud and they're on the first floor where our washing machine is, I don't think we're obligated to take the clothing off and put it upstairs in a hamper someplace. And we put it straight into the washing machine.
You can't do that.
But you're not allowed to wash by hand, so there's a difference because you're not allowed to wash laundry at all.
Okay.
And the dishes you are, so is that different?
It is different, but I don't think it applies. I don't think there's a ramification here. Yeah.
So for the part about preparing for the next day, in Yom Kippur, presumably the same rules would apply. But I mean, people are going to be very hungry and want to eat right away after Yom Kippur.
Yeah, so there is actually a heter on Yom Kippur that one can prepare to make food preparations on Yom Kippur for after Yom Kippur. And part of the svar is because it will make your fast worse. It's part of the inui of Yom Kippur to prepare. I believe it's mentioned Shulchan Aruch. I don't remember the details right now.
Even if Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos.
Well,
Yom Kippur is like Shabbos even if it isn't on Shabbos.
Yeah, yeah. No, the same halachos would apply. But it would be considered part of your affliction on Yom Kippur to be preparing food for after Yom Kippur. I believe in Hilchos Yom Kippur there is a dispensation.
What about you're not supposed to wash your hands, so how you prepare the food? Okay. Your hands are dirty. So
avoid washing your hands.
Then the food will be dirty.
Okay. Well, you can wear gloves.
All right. All right, Yashikawa.
Yeah.
Coming? Yeah. All right.